Happy Halloween!
Welcome, dear listeners. Welcome to Literary Italy. You can follow us on Facebook at Literary Italy, on Twitter at Literary Italy. Our handle on Instagram is Literary Italy Podcast. And if you want to contact us, you can send us mail at mail@literaryitaly.com. Our website is www.literaryitaly.com. And welcome.
Welcome. I'm making a spooky face.
That is. That's very good for our
listeners. It's
Halloween.
We probably should have done this episode a couple of days ago so we could post it today. But we'll post it on November 1st. And, you know,
the spookiness just continues throughout all of November.
Well, in fact, that we're going to talk a little bit about that, about how it's a spooky season.
Plus, somebody may be listening to this a year from now and get frightened out of their wits. That's always a possibility.
That's always a possibility.
Well, listening to our podcast is always a little frightening. At least recording it is.
When I listen to it, I get frightened. Today, we're going to talk about a short story by the author Luigi Capuana, who was a Sicilian from 19th century. And this is a short kind of a ghost story called A Vampire, Un Vampiro. And I also would like to talk a little bit about Halloween traditions in Italy, because I think that while it is true that Halloween is becoming more and more popular as a sort of party theme in Italy, Halloween itself is not so much indigenous to Italy.
This is what we've always said.
However, there are some traditions that are specific to Halloween that I think we're going to talk about.
And very regional traditions.
Yeah.
It's not.
Well, that's always Italy. It's always regional, right?
Well, you might say La Befana and Epiphanies and Christmas aren't particularly regional. Christmas is not regional, but Halloween.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you talk about where Halloween, where October 31st, November 1st, where those places really were kind of celebrations of the deceased, of the dead.
Right. So Halloween, meaning All Hallows Eve, the evening before All Saints Day. November 1st is in the Catholic religion is the Feast of All Saints Day. And it is in Italy, it's a national holiday. People get the day off from work and the day off from school. November 2nd, so All Saints Day is a day to honor all of the saints. So all of those dead people who are in heaven with God.
And who are famous for their sanctity or who are known to be have led holy lives. It's for the holies.
Yeah.
The elect.
I would say recognized and also not recognized. Mm-hmm. November 2nd is the day of All Souls. So this is...
It's like Festivus. It's the holiday for the
for
rest,
the rest
of,
us. So All Souls Day is a day to remember all of the dead. The dead from... Generally, you know, from your family. And so I would say in all of Italy, traditionally, that's the day to go to the cemetery to visit the graves of your deceased relatives. Usually it's a kind of cleanup day. You know, you clean up the grave. So where does that leave October 31st, All Hallows Eve, you know, Halloween? In some areas of Italy, there is a tradition of the Day of the Dead, and that would be November 2nd. But sometimes that also falls to that eve, you know, that eve of All Saints, which would be the evening where we're kind of crossing into not the souls in heaven, not the souls in purgatory, but perhaps the damned, you know, not to put a fine point on it.
The darned.
All of these days, this is kind of like a whole, I think we might want to call it like a whole period, a whole feast, you know, the whole period is kind of interesting. So as Jim was saying, different regions have different traditions. And it is interesting, we're going to talk today about a short story by Luigi Capuana, who is from the Catania area in Sicily. It is interesting that Sicily is one of those places that does have really pretty strong traditions around All Saints Day, All Souls Day, and also this October 31st. And some of the things that they do, will sound familiar, I think, to American listeners who are used to the American Halloween. Now, all that said, and this has been noticeable to me as someone who's been going to Italy for over 30 years, the Americanized Halloween, which has really is kind of completely separated, I think, from the religious traditions or even the Celtic traditions. The Americanized Halloween has definitely encroached into Italy. Mm. So you do see kids dressing up. You do have lots of parties and spooky themed parties and lots of candy going around. I don't think you see a whole lot of trick-or-treating like you do here in the United States, because I think that that practice or tradition is still quite foreign. But I think that Halloween, you know, you see Halloween decorations around this time of the year.
Yep.
It sort of also blends into a harvest festival as well. Right. Anyway.
And that's its Celtic roots too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so here we are, you know, October 31st. So one of the things that's traditional in Sicily is that kids would get on the morning of the day of All Souls. So sometime during the night, they would receive a basket of sweets, usually hidden someplace in their house that they have to go find. Mm. And this is called the canistru. You know, it is a basket, sort of like an Easter basket, but it's like a Halloween basket. And it has sweets that are specific for All Souls. And the idea is that it's the departed souls from your family who are bringing you these sweets. These it's also called the Fiera dei Morti, the festival of the dead, the Morticini. You know, so presumably they're nice. Mm-hmm. You know, they're nice dead relatives. And so you honor them and they honor you. There's a little bit of like...
It's not quite clear. When you said damned, I thought that was a little bit strong because I think it's also the unquiet dead.
But that would be Halloween.
Right.
Right. So that, and we'll talk a little bit, I think, more with the ghost story.
Yes.
Element. So yeah, I mean, for your family dead, the Day of the Dead, I think that's something, that's a tradition that's getting a little bit more popular too, also in the United States with the influence from the Mexican traditions of the Day of the Dead on November 2nd. But it's interesting to me that there is this tradition in Sicily. There's also this tradition in Sardinia of children going door to door asking for sweets. And it can be, in some places, it can be on the Day of All Souls Day, but it can, in other places, it's October 31st. Mm-hmm. It sounds an awful lot like trick-or-treating. You know, they go door to door and they get sweets. They collect sweets from people. In addition, in Sardinia, you would put out on the eve of All Souls Day. So that would be on the night of November 1st, you would put out on a table a dish of macaroni and a glass of wine and some water for your departed relatives. Mm. And if you don't do that,
they are going to be peeved.
They're going to be really mad at you and could possibly bother you the rest of the year. There are traditions like that all over the peninsula in various places. Up north, they leave out beans, you know, for their relatives, you know, whatever, really, whatever is the local.
They call that the day of the gas.
The day of the beans. So there essentially, there is this sense of, especially around this time of the year, of a communication between the living and the dead. And this is true in the Catholic religion, but also in the culture as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that you honor someone's grave. I mean, why do you do that if you don't think that they're in some way, that is a way of honoring their memory? It's their, you know, or perhaps actually honoring their spirit, their soul.
Yes.
Depending on, you know, and I think it sort of covers a whole range of possible
And as you say, it has that sort of connection to, you see it in other cultures such as Mexico, for example,
very common
that the notion of something. And I think we've even touched on that in some of our readings, that there's a kind of permeable membrane between the living and the dead. It's something that I think you have Christ stopped at Eboli. There's that kind of supernatural element that hangs over.
In you mean Carlo Levi's book about Basilicata?
Yeah.
Yes, and I think that's something too that's worth mentioning is that it, you know, traditionally Italy is known for being kind of a place with a lot of superstitions.
Yeah.
And some of these sort of touch, you know, obviously some of these are religious beliefs, but some touch into superstition.
But here's the, to me, the interesting thing, and this was something that when I was trying to learn Italian, a language teacher was telling me, which was that there's that image of Italy as being superstitious and very spiritual, but there's a literary tradition and an intellectual tradition that ties both France and Italy together. That's also, and I think you see it in this story, that's hyper-rationalistic.
Right, right.
And these things kind of, they war with, there's this tension between the two of them. There's very much, you know, the Italy of Galileo, you know, the Italy of, you know, we're going to place the world on a grid and we're going to understand it. And once we pull things apart, we'll be able to see things as they are, as the bits of matter and meat that constitute the world.
But it's both there.
It's both,
it's
right,
both
exactly.
There. Maybe we should talk about the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So this is a short story by Luigi Capuana, and it's in some ways atypical for him. He's known as a writer of verismo, which is verist, like realistic writing. There you don't find in this kind of in his writing and some of the other veristi, like Verga, you don't find so much symbolism, like heavy symbolic messages. You find a lot of dialogue.
This is the entire first three or four.
Yeah. So in some ways, this is very atypical for him because it's a ghost story. Uh-huh. So that's not like you would say, well, that's not really verismo. But at the same time, the way it's written, you know, you get dropped from the very beginning of the story, and we're going to link it.
You also don't. So I'll jump ahead. I'm not going to jump very far ahead, but this is a story called A Vampire. And I'm sorry, you know, when I pick up a story called A Vampire, I think of a guy in a cape, and I'm waiting for a guy in a cape, or I'm waiting for that sort of vampire image.
You're waiting for a guy in a cape.
Yes, that's the, yes, but that's the image, right? The image, or, you know, even if you think of Twilight, you're thinking of
Bram Stoker.
You're also thinking, but you're thinking of embodied beings that are seductive. And this has that weird, this blurs the line between phantasm and vampire.
Sure. Let's tell the story.
Sure.
I think we need to tell the story. Okay. So the story is interesting. It's a short story where we will link to it because it's in the public domain.
Yeah. And we'll also, what I had found was, I hope we can link to it. There's a,
the LibriVox recording.
There's a LibriVox recording.
With the translation in English.
Sure. Yes, and the woman who did the translation is also doing the recording.
So what's interesting is it's a short story, maybe about 12, you know, single space pages long. And it takes a while to kind of, you're dropped right in the middle of a conversation between these two men. And that's where I would say this is typical of Capuana style, where you're just dropped in and you're like, who's talking? What's going on? You know, almost as though you're literally at a cafe or at a bar,
right,
and there are these two guys talking and you're kind of listening in. And so you have that, and that starts out the story. And the two men are Lelio Giorgi and his friend, who's a doctor, Mungeri. And
no first name given, at least that.
No,
that
it never is it?
Yeah.
So Lelio, who's just referred to as Lelio, his first name, is telling him about how upset he is because he and his wife have been seeing these things, and Mungeri, who does most of the talking, actually doesn't really let Lelio.
That's kind of the joke on the first two. They're like, let me tell you what's happening.
Mungeri has a very scientific, he says, you two have been having hallucinations. He says, well, how are we both having hallucinations?
Well, you're suggestible. Right, you have a certain receptivity.
She did first, and now you do.
Right.
And he says, why at the same time? Because now that there is this pattern, et cetera, et cetera. So whatever, the hallucination or the image that they're seeing, there's this specter that is visiting them during the night. So finally, after 3 or 4 pages of introduction, Lelio says, "Can I tell my story?" Basically, so okay. So the story is that Lelio and his wife, whose name is Luisa, had been in love several years ago. Lelio is introduced as a poet. He's with some renown, but not much income. So at the time that they were in love, Luisa's parents forbade her from marrying him because they figured as a poet, he was not a really good prospect. So he leaves Italy and goes to L'America. He goes to Argentina, goes to Buenos Aires, and kind of loses touch with Luisa. And while he's there, he has a rich uncle who dies and leaves him a tremendous inheritance. So he says, aha, now's my chance. I can go back and I can marry Luisa. So he gets back to Italy, and what does he find out? But he finds out that Luisa has married, or probably has been married by her parents to a man of greater fortune. So while he's there, he writes a letter to Luisa to say, I still love you. I can't believe you got married, blah, blah, blah. And shortly after that, ding dong, it's not a trick-or-treater. It's Luisa's husband who intercepted the letter, not really realizing what it was. And he says, this is my wife. Okay. And we've been married for a couple of months. Okay. And
he's actually from the San Fernando Valley.
And he's
Valley
like, this is not cool. And so it's interesting because this story is, I should know the date,
1800s.
It's late 19th century. It's kind of a time where the duel is sort of getting out of tradition, but it still is a tradition. You know, you make these kind of advances on someone else's wife. He has you would not be surprised that he would challenge you. But he says, look, I understand the two of you had something years ago. It's over. I'm married to her now. Just leave her alone and I'll just forget this whole happened. And so this whole thing happened. And so they do. I mean, I can't say they leave as friends, but they kind of have this sort of
understanding. there's a very civil and rational conclusion to the affair. That there's no sense in spilling blood. Let's keep things amicable. It's very civil
and very rational, I think, because that is the tension in this whole story between rationality and the irrational or the supernatural is probably. So 6 months later, Lelio is contacted by Luisa, who says, guess what? My husband's dead. My husband died a couple of months ago and I'm still in love with you. And if you still want to get married, baby, I'm yours. So they get married and they're very happy and things seem to be doing great. And she gets pregnant, which is even greater. And she says, I'm sure glad it happened this time with you. And that sort of seems to trigger a change. Something changes. So there's a couple things. This is where, to me, you know, as a reader, I found this very interesting because it emphasizes to Lelio that his wife was not a virgin when he married her, that she had been married before, she had had sexual relations with her first husband, and so he can't get that out of his mind. So this Louis, this him, is suddenly back in the picture, even though he's dead. And sure enough, what begins to happen is this spirit at this point begins to visit them. When the baby is born, there's a spirit that comes during the night and starts.
They start hearing footsteps. They start hearing the usual sort of infestation.
Right. And then it gets more and more directed toward the baby.
Yeah.
Starts knocking over the doesn't actually hurt, you know, knock the baby out of the crib, but.
Rocks the cradle.
Yeah, but not in a comforting way. Rocks the cradle.
Baby's crying.
Baby's crying. And then the baby also begins to be wasting away.
Yep.
And the
woman can see the specter, I believe. That's sort of the implication. Yes. Is the woman can see the specter, the husband can't, Lelio can't.
At this point, right. Okay. At this point, there's a point where he does see something. So at this point, he doesn't. But he does hear his wife say, "What? It's you. It's you. But you're dead. Aren't you dead? What? I didn't poison you." And that's to me where, as a reader, I went, "What? Ooh." So the spirit is actually accusing his wife of having killed him so that she could marry this, her second husband. And Lelio presumably is hearing his wife's side. And, you know, to me, that's begins the more psychological part of this story. So at this point, the doctor, Mungeri, he's still saying, "Well, this is all nonsense, stuff and nonsense." But he says, you know, we scientists have found that there is some merit to these traditions, kind of these old wives' tales.
In some ways, it gets very sort of Ghostbustery in that he claims there's kind of an ectoplasmic connection between the body, that the old body retains a kind of awareness until the body decomposes. So it's kind of an echo of the being, and that this is actually explainable. The idea, I think, would be if you were to press it, would be you could go with a bunch of instruments and detect this very subtle essence of the dying first husband.
It is kind of Ghostbustery.
Yeah.
He's not the Bill Murray of the group.
No. He's Egon.
He's Egon. It's exactly what I was thinking. So Mungeri proposes that he spends the night with this couple. So now,
so that he can witness these weird phenomenon right. Where there's, you know, there's,
right, because Lelio was saying, "You've got to come. You've got to come see this.
Right, because Mungeri has been saying things like, "Well, of course, you know, the house is settling, and well, we're hearing footsteps right next to us. My wife sees the apparition sucking the life out of our child."
Right. What's also interesting is sort of as an aside, Mungeri says to Lelio, his friend, he says, you couldn't get me to marry a widow for all the gold in the world.
And the reason is because of this attachment that they have to their dead husband.
Not just that, but someone else has been there first.
Well, right. But there's also the end of the story where he contradicts that. And the reason he gives is because, well, but I don't know that we have to lay out the story in full detail. I think what happens from this point is this is the point at which there is an encounter with a ghost. There are people that feel physically attacked or, you know, battered slightly by the ghost. The resolution that Mungeri proposes is because this is basically an artifact of a decomposing, that death is more of a slanted line rather than an abrupt shift. You have to burn the body, which is something that is one of the ways of disposing of vampires that people have said, if you burn the vampire, yep, you can do that. The interesting thing again is that rather than literally drawing blood corporeally, this is sort of a ghost that draws energy or life. I think that there is something like life, you know, the elan vital, the life essence that's being drawn from healthy people by this spirit.
And particularly this baby.
Particularly the baby, yeah. who's got it in.
And
abundance.
The resolution comes in about two sentences. You know, so it's like, yeah, so they burned the body, and after that they had no more bothers, visits.
And Mungeri writes it up as in a scientific article saying, a supposed case of vampirism.
And then the irony is at the very end.
Is that, well, and
who does he marry?
He marries
a widow.
but he says it's okay because her husband's body has already decomposed.
It's been 6 years.
It's been 6 years. There's not an atom left next to the other atom.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, in a fairly short, in a quite short story, there's a lot of interesting things in here. You know, with some of these, we touched on this whole issue of the, you know, do you marry a widow and what she brings with her? You know, this memory of this first husband. There is the emphasis on, you know, as far as writing style, since we were talking about Capuana, this emphasis on dialogue. You know, mm-hmm. So there's a whole, you know, you're kind of saying, where's the action? There's so much dialogue.
There's a lot of exposition in the dialogue. Yes. You're telling the story.
Yeah. And then it it sort of wraps up very quickly, but almost as a joke.
But weirdly, that those weird moments, there are those moments where her arms are grabbed or he gets smacked in the back. And those are always these kind of like where you're kind of, oh, something seems to be at stake.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the way a lot of ghost things are described, in as much as people have this feeling or this sense or something moves, but it's not like the veil is ever entirely pierced, right? So it's a door that slams. Well, maybe something slammed the door. Yeah, but how could something slam the door? But it's not a Technicolor, you know, exorcist feast of, you know, it's subtle things. It's a slap. You feel a slap, or you feel you feel your arms being pulled back. At one point, Lelio and his wife are being physically feel themselves being pulled apart by her first husband.
Right. There's also, this is also interesting with the language. There's also where her face kind of changes. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the English translation you have has, but it says something, you know, that special beauty of her.
Yeah, I always felt that she's at that point kind of almost possessed. Like he's speaking through her at some point.
But he says the way she had that pure beauty that she had, almost virginal, is gone. So that's very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I mean,
there is a purely psychological reading that's available.
Oh, yes.
That there is actually no, nothing supernatural happening.
Right. And as I said, it's interesting,
a matter of suggestion.
It's as soon as she says, I'm sure glad I didn't get pregnant with my first husband doing the deed, that he's like, wait, oh, right. You did. Huh? Right. Okay.
And that kind of goes to the very beginning of the way the story begins, because it begins with Mondry saying, well, there are facts and hallucinations are facts. They're social and psychological facts. And you have to deal with those facts. So it's not like, it's not as if we have absolutely nothing to say about those. So, I thought that was kind of an interesting way of beginning it, which is the ghost stories, even if we discount in a particular instance or in all instances a supernatural explanation, they have a certain realism and a certain psychological salience.
Truth. Yeah, there's a kind of truth to them, whether you're actually seeing these.
And they tend to manifest, and they tend to, I would say the psychological reading is that it becomes like a contagion, so much so that Mongeri, if he were to incline to explain it this way, he gets drawn into this. He becomes, in dealing with this exchange of symbols that the couple is doing, it becomes real for him as well. He feels.
Well, and sure enough, when he does come and spends the night there at their house, the phantasm accuses him, says, oh, what do you want to be the third husband? You're going to try to poison him. You know, begin. And so there is this suggestion of, you know, and
he does marry, he marries a widow, a different widow.
He does marry a different widow. I think it's interesting. I think it leaves it open whether Louisa actually did poison her first husband. But I think to me, the implication is no, she didn't, but she really did want to get him out of the way.
She did want to get him out of the way.
And so did.
And that's the thing that, and the psychological truth of that,
right,
is like, is the guilt that you harbor, wishing that somebody were out of the
yes.
way.
Yes, and for both of them,
yes.
Lelio and also Louisa. And so it's an interesting little story. It's interesting to note that Italian literature doesn't have as strong a tradition of horror literature, horror, as there is both in English and American literature. And so there is no Edgar Allan Poe Italiano.
Or Bram Stoker.
But at the same time, there are these little stories like this one. Grazia Deleda, who we spoke about several episodes ago, who's a Sardinian author. She has a whole lot of Sardinian folktales, including some of these.
And Calvino, in his Italian stories, has
it's a like you pick an Italian author. They also have something like this, like a story that sort of starts to kind of nudge into between folklore and horror.
Yep.
I think in another episode, this next episode, we're going to talk about spooky Italy.
Right.
All right. So this, I wanted to talk about Luigi Capuano and this particular story and this tradition of ghost story, but I think we're going to kind of expand that in another episode and talk a little bit more about folklore.
Okay.
Okay. Because I think that's a much stronger tradition in Italy.
So this week it's Luigi Capuano,
Vampire.
Un Vampiro. It's available in LibriVox. I don't know if actually the Italian is, it's public domain.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So you can hear it in English. I'm not sure. I didn't find the text. I didn't find an English text, but if we can find one, we will link to it in the show notes. And I think that's going to be, Anne, do you have anything else you want to talk about as far as Luigi goes?
No, I think that we'll talk a little bit more about Sicily when we talk about Giovanni Verga, who's a contemporary of Capuano, who also, like Capuano, is also in this tradition of Verismo, of this realistic kind of coming out of the 19th century or sort of late 19th century writing. Much more like you're, as a reader, you're kind of dropped right into the middle of the text. And you can see that, I think, in this story. All right. So enjoy ghost stories. Spooky.
Spooky. Alla prossima.
Okay. A dopo.